Halacha, as we know it, is a very ambiguous and cumbersome endeavor that we don't really have a good clarity, most individuals, as to what it is, where it comes from, how can it be. You know, I want to know what to do on Shabbos. Let me open up my Mishnah Brura, and that'll give me a good idea, and then I'm good to go, right? That's a great way. Or, better yet, I have the English 39 Malachos book, and as long as I read through the 39 Malachos book, then I'm ready to be a posek. I can do whatever I want. I have a shaila at dinner. I have a shaila at dinner of what bracha to make, bracha Rishona, what bracha Achrona. All I gotta do is look it up, and I'm good to go. That's generally what people assume, the average yeshivacher. And the answer really is that we are extremely mistaken. And we have no idea what we're doing, and therefore it behooves us to have a little bit of background and understanding. What is halacha? Where does it come from? And how does a posek work? We all know that Har Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us shtei Torahs, Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaalpeh. And the Mefarshim asked a very basic question. If you're already giving out Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaalpeh, so why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu give Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai Kol HaTorah Kula, every single thing, what to do under every single circumstance, from the beginning of time until the end of time? Why don't you lay it out clearly, easily, concisely, and let every single person, all you got to do, look in the rule book. Oh, it's 1.7.3a. That's what to do here. We're good to go. And that's it. Why is it that the Torah seemingly, Torah Shebichsav is limited, and even Torah Shebaalpeh, which is so vast and so great, right? It's so amazingly big, but at the end of the day, there's Mishnayos, not that much. Move on to Gemara, a little bit more, 2711, 2711 Daffin. It's a little more, it takes 7 years, but it's really not that much. And all of a sudden, as time develops, you have Rishonim, you have Achronim, you have Poskim, you have this, you have that, going. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu just lay it out? Why did he make it simple? The Yamshel Shlomo, in his Akdama to Baba Kama, famously points out, that really it was impossible, to have every single circumstance from the beginning of time until the end of history laid out at Har Sinai. Rechava min hayam, it was so great and so vast, so cumbersome, that it was impossible to lay out the rules, dry, bare-bone rules, for every circumstance. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu alternatively, at Har Sinai, gave us principles. He gave us principles. He gave us kalolim to use and to decipher and understand under every single circumstance. You want to know what to do now? Something new comes up? So it wasn't spoken about at High Sinai. We didn't have Hashem at High Sinai. He didn't tell us when the light bulb's invented that many years later, guess what? Here's the rule. No, that's not what happened. Hashem laid out principles. And we're supposed to be medama milsa la milsa. Use these principles in order to decipher and understand how every single new circumstance will be passed and will be explained al pi halacha. Bizman habayis, we had a Sanhedrin. And the way it worked is when a person had a shaila, a new circumstance arose that wasn't obvious, they would go to their local Beis Din in their ear. Every single city had a Beis Din. They went to their local city and they asked the Shaila. We just invented something brand new. We don't know what the halacha is. This is a great new invention. You know what it does? It's a mamish amazing. You put these like circle things on the bottom of like a box, and all of a sudden, like, you have a horse and you, like, sit on it, and it's so much easier, and I could like take four people with the horse instead of one. It's called a wagon. What do we do with the wagon? What's the halachas of a wagon? Oh, that's talked about based on Diamond Mills from the Milsa, and there are bottom in the city would decipher what they thought the halacha was based on their competence and vast knowledge of Torah that they had, and they would paskin. And if you weren't clear, it wasn't obvious, you know what? There was an appeal system. Eventually, you go to the Sanhedrin, and that's what the Gemara says, Nimnu v'gomru, that the Rabbanim of the Sanhedrin, Agadol, and Lishkas, Agadol, in the Beis HaMikdash, together would discuss the Shaila Mikol HaTzadin. They would take all the different Svaras back and forth, and eventually they were Oymed Leminyin, the Lashon of the Gemara, the Oymed Leminyin, and they decided, okay, what's the Psak? So you have 50 paskening this way, 20 paskening that way. Guess what? So the halacha follows the robach re'rabim nahatos. That's the way it worked with Zman HaSanhedrin. The Sanhedrin was led by the Abizdin and the Nasi, the Oymei Barosh. If you go through the Mishnayis in the first parak of Pirkei Avos, and you have all of the Zugois that are listed there, those are the Zugois, or the Nasi and the Sanhedrin, and the Abizdin of the Sanhedrin in their generation. And every generation had their Sanhedrin that paskin the Shilas. And once the Beis Din Agadol and Yerushalayim paskin the Shilas, it was usher to paskin against them. That's called the Zaken Mamre. Nimnu v'gamru, they determined based on their understanding, their depth of understanding of how halacha works, being medame milsa l'milsa, comparing new circumstances to old rules, that allowed them, with a new svara, that allowed them to paskin Hashayil. The Gemara tells us, Yiftach bedoro kishmuel bedoro. That every generation, you go to a chacham, asher yeh biyomim ahem, you go to the chacham in that time, and don't start telling me, well, if Shmuel would have been around, Shmuel was a massive novi, he was the best of the best, the greatest of the great, right? So Yiftach was much lower level. So, if Shmuel would have been around, he would have paskin differently. The answer is, I don't really care. Your generation, as your Navi, as your Sanhedrin, as your Pesach, that's appropriate for that generation, who understands the times, who understands the circumstances in that generation, and we have to paskin base, we have to accept the psak of the Chacham in that generation exactly as he paskins it. And we can't start saying, well, if there would have been a different person around, we would pass them differently. Maybe, maybe not. We are mishubar, we are subservient, we're supposed to accept upon ourselves the psak of the Beis Din in that generation. Yes?
Why do we care how great Noah was why do you care how great he was?
I don't know what that has to do with our conversation right now. We'll talk about it in time. So that's the way it was at the time that you had a Sanhedrin, the Gadol, and Yerushalayim, and you had a Nimnu v'Gamru. They established the Psak. However, the Amshel Shlomo elaborates and explains, guess what? Unfortunately, there's no more Sanhedrin. Unfortunately, there's no more Psak that's Yoytzim B'yas Sanhedrin. And all of a sudden, you no longer have a definitive bottom line Psak Halacha for everyone. So what happened? So you had two Gedolei Olam, that opened up different Batei Medrash. And in each base medrash, they use their most apt capabilities, their best skills, to try to figure out what the psak would be under the new circumstance that arose. And as time went on and Torah developed, the development of Torah was based on new circumstances, new shilas that arose, a new contract. We all of a sudden have a corporation. How do we pass them on a corporation? You have a shukfas that wanted to break apart. What do we do now? And developed two different Batei Medrash that were led by Hillel and Shammai, and Hillel and Shammai, each in their base Medrash, had different approaches, different methodologies of how they approached the Shilas. And that's when Machlokes started to break out. When you no longer have a Psak Yotze Mipi the Sanhedrin HaGadol in Yerushalayim, and each base medrash is supposed to pass them based on their best capabilities, so all of a sudden you have a machlokes that occurs, and people that are in the Beis Shammai Beis Medrash are mechoyev to listen and follow different Beis Shammai. That's what the Gemara tells us. Rabbi Elazar Shamutihu. He was Shamuti. He followed Beis Shammai's opinion from beginning to end. And therefore, since we don't pass him like Beis Shammai, we don't pass him like Rabbi Elazar. Masha Enkein in the Beis Hillel Beis Medrash, they followed Beis Hillel. Ad Kedei Kach, they had to follow the halacha until the end. If he was Machmir, Machmir was Mekel, was Mekel. It didn't matter. The Gemara lists 18 cases where they were passing for Klal Yisrael, and there was a machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, and there were more people in the Beis Shammai Beis Medrash than Hillel, in the Aliyah. And in that, those 18 cases, the psak for Klal Yisrael was like Beis Shammai. Because in that time, Beis Hillel had more people than Beis Shammai, and we still had a roiv to follow. The Gemara tells us, Yotza Baskel v'amra halacha kativ Beis Hillel, and Tosfos asks, we mashkichim v'baskel, we don't follow the Baskel, so how come over there we do follow the Baskel? And there are different reasons, but at the end of the day, the halacha for Klal Yisrael at that time was like Beis Hillel. However, the individuals that were in Beis Shammai's Beis Medrash were Meshubad and followed Beis Shammai's opinion. Yes?
After the Sanhedrin didn't exist anymore, then I thought the power to be, so like, the song for the entire Bavai Yisrael went away, so
In that circumstance, that was the only time, that actually there was a psak for all of Klal Yisrael. But already at that time, we have a machlokes that's developing. You see the roots of machlokes that start to occur, and you have people that are following different opinions. You have people in the Beis Shammai Beis Medrash that are following Beis Shammai, and people in the Beis Hillel Beis Shammai Medrash that are following Beis Hillel. The Gemara in Yevamos does tell us that they would marry each other. People from Beis Shammai would marry people from Beis Hillel. That even if they held in their Beis Medrash the person's a mamzer, nonetheless they'd be willing to marry. Yes.
So the 18 cases were applying to others like Beis Shammai.
There are 18 cases. The Gemara lists, the Mishnayos list, that even though normally we follow Beis Hillel, there are 18 cases we follow Beis Shammai.
Even after the Baskel came,
yes.
People within
yes.
the Beis Shammai still follow Beis Shammai.
Right.
Is that the civic ordinance? What did you say? You don't follow
Beis Shammai. But for the rest of Klal Yisrael, you follow Beis Shammai.
But you're saying like the Yom Kippur.
However, what happens in the history of Klal Yisrael, like the Gemara lists, and we mentioned it in Bava Metzia, that nishtakhu, that Torah started to be forgotten from Klal Yisrael. People started to forget the principles that were used in order to pass in Shilas. And Rabbeinu HaKodesh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, understood the circumstance of the generation was very dire. And if I don't start to write something down, if I don't start to collect all the teachings of the principles and write down something, it's going to be lost forever. And the next generation that's going to come about aren't going to have these principles to use in order to paskin the new shailas that come up and the new circumstances that they encounter. And therefore, Rabbeinu HaKodesh went around all of Eretz Yisrael, from the top to the bottom, every base measure that existed, and he collected different teachings from all over, and he compared notes what was being said in the Negev to what was being said in the Galil and what was being said in the Golan and all over the place. And he collects all of these things together. And Rebbe discerned what was the standard normative most commonly accepted approach. And he wrote that down in the Mishnayos. That's what we have in Mishnayos. He wrote that down in the Mishnayos. However, Rebbe included also alternative approaches. In other words, we already see by the time of Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, that Machlokas in Klal Yisrael had developed greatly. Different cities were following different psakim. You have Tzipayri all the way up north, where you see the Rebbe Yehuda Yossi Aglili was up there, and in his base measures they're following one way, and down south they're following different psakim, and every base measures, every city, every year had its rav that was passing the new shilas that were coming up. And Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi went around and collected and understood that this is the majority opinion, this is the standard approach, this is the more correct way to teach it. And he wrote down the Mishnayos in a way that we have the normative approach that was presented in Klal Yisrael at the time. However, when there was an alternative opinion that was significant and important, Rebbe included that in the Mishnayos. Those are the Das Yechidin that are mentioned throughout Mishnayos. We have a Machlekes. And when there wasn't a standard approach in Klal Yisrael, but the two approaches seem to be equally nispashate, they spread out equally, so Rebbe write it down as two Yechidim, Rebbe Yehuda Remeir. And that's how you have, you see by that time already, we're talking before Chorban HaBayis, that Machlokas, right around Chorban HaBayis, the Machlokas in Klal Yisrael started to develop very, very much. And this was because, very simply, I'll get to you in a second, this was because there was no central authority, any longer to paskin the shilas. And every city had their rav, every base medrash had its Rosh Yeshiva, and they went to the Rosh Yeshiva with the new circumstances, and they were supposed to use their best chachma and capabilities to discern and decipher how to apply the principles to the new circumstance that arrived. Yes.
When there was the big basin, the Sanhedrin, so that made it so that the all the halacha was localized to that one place, and then once they were gone, then the halacha changed, and now places had their own halachas.
Right.
So basically, Beis Shammai was just one place. Beis Hillel was another place. They each were just. Why couldn't they just? Why couldn't? Is it that there's 72? That whole thing. That is only why couldn't we centralize it? Wouldn't it have been smart to centralize it anyway? I guess you just did it in different places, so you couldn't centralize it because there's no centralization.
Probably wasn't practical.
They couldn't exactly have the internet to post these
things. So, what we see from this, says the Yamshel Shlomo very clearly in his Akdamah of Baba Kamo, the Yamshel Shlomo points out very, very clearly that the Ratzon HaTorah, was and is that every individual is supposed to use his best capabilities and best understanding in order to paskin the shaila. The Torah wants us to approach a sugya, approach a circumstance that arises, with our utmost and ultimate koyach, putting in all the yegia, all the amelos, everything necessary, understand every possible approach, every possible opinion, why it should be that way, why it should be the other way, and then coming to a conclusion with the practical halacha as it makes most sense, as it should be in our eyes. And that's why every place had its own opinion. Ramosha, in his Akdoma to Igris Moshe Chelek Aleph, says Ramosha, quotes the Gemara in Erev and Daf Yud Gimel, Abishame Beisilel Eilu Ve'Eilu Divrek Elokim Chai. The Gemara tells us that even though they had different approaches, And each approach had its own opinion. At the end of the day, they're both called Torah. The Kevin Shechayin the Farish b'Torah k'Beis Shammai u'k'Beis Hillel. Because since you can learn Torah both like Beis Shammai b'Beis Hillel, I nimsa shenam harkit arvayu. That somehow the Torah actually includes both of these opinions. Kol shmach loy nizbatlu das echad b'Rabbi Machokim. As long as there's no achram lahatois. In other words, the Torah was given specifically in a manner, in a way, that was niton lahazbu, was given for our own explanation and understanding. Torah, the process of development of Torah and Halacha, is not a top-down institution. It's not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu laid it all out and we're just supposed to be passive individuals that receive it all, understand it all, memorize it all, and just become a piece of parchment for having it all written upon. No. Torah is a shutfus. It's a partnership. HaKadosh Baruch Hu laid out the principles. HaKadosh Baruch Hu laid out the rules. And we're supposed to use those rules, those mechanisms and understandings to, with our own baggage, our own understanding, our own background, to approach the circumstance and use those principles to attack a new situation and understand how the principles apply here. And therefore, as long as a person is being true to the principles, he's doing as your Shemayim, and he's doing it L'Shem Shemayim, and he's doing it in a real way. He doesn't come with an agenda, he doesn't come with preconceived notions. And he's trying to discern and decipher and understand what is in front of me now. What does the Torah want me to do now? As long as that is true, the Gemara is telling us in Erevin, Eilu ve'elu, Devrei Elokim Chayim. Each approach is accurately considered a chelik of Torah. So Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, even if they're saying diametrically opposed, opposite things, it doesn't matter. They're both a chelik, integrally a part of Torah. The Gemara does tell us that if somebody is a toe bidvar mishnah, that if somebody paskins and they made a mistake in a mishnah, their psak goes against a mishnah that's not called a psak. That's not called a psak. In other words, if somebody made an obvious mistake when they were approaching the new shiloh that aroused, and they made an obvious mistake and they didn't remember something that was basic in the rules, didn't remember the klalim, so that's not called a valid chelik of Torah. I'm sorry, you lost your portion of being Torah, because that's not Torah. Torah said, here are 15 rules, you got to stay with the rules. You forgot rule 15 because your psak contradicts rule 15, so you are not considered, that is not a psak, a chelik of Torah. But as long as somebody remains true to those rules and principles and uses them to understand the new circumstance that arises, then guess what? That is considered eilu v'eilu, divin l'kim chayim. That's a chelik of Torah. Question?
Yeah. Maybe we explain, but I didn't fully understand, but what exactly is the reason why Hashem wanted it to be such a burden? That's not our
reason. I didn't go into that. I just explained that that's the reality. I didn't go into the details of why that's the reality, but we see clear that that is the reality. What?
Can you tell us why?
Not for now.
When you say something that goes against the Mishnah, do you mean something that goes against what's in the Mishnah? Does that extend to each new generation?
Let's get there. Next step was obvious. Remember that about 300 years after the Mishnayos were concluded, so you had the Tekufas, Amoraim, the time of the Amoraim. Most of the Amoraim were already up in Bavel, living in Bavel. However, you still have a Sheiris HaPleita, you have a remainder living in Eretz Yisrael, and the Amoraim developed their yeshivas, and they had their understanding, they elaborated upon the klalim of the Mishnayos to decipher what these klalim were, to elaborate, explain them more clearly. And that's what the Gemara is. The Gemara, you have the Talmud Bavli, Talmud Yerushalmi, were the two different schools of thought that were elaborating upon, extending and explaining the details of what these klalim really were. What is the Mishnah trying to tell us? Why were the Mishnayos written vague? Why were they written in a way that was left for so much interpretation? So the famous Tosfos Yom Tov. The Tosfos Yom Tov tells us, imagine you are sitting in a class, and it's a week before your final, and your mother comes to you and says, "Hey Billy, we're going to go on a skiing trip. We're going on a skiing trip tomorrow. Don't worry, you'll be back 3 days before your final. No, plenty of time to study, no problem." And you're like, "A ski trip? That's amazing. Where are we going? Vermont? That's the best. I'm not missing that for the world." So you turn to your friend in class and you say, "Do me a favor. I'm going away for 3 days. I'm going to miss 3-day review of the biology. Can you do me a favor and take notes in biology class for me, so when I get back, I'll have what to study. I'll be ready for the midterm." 3 days later, you come back, your friend, Baruch Hashem, he did what he was supposed to, he hands you the big notebook, 3 pages full of notes, and you're all excited. You get home to study for your midterm, to get ready, studious, diligent student. You get home, you open up your notebook from your friend, and you start to look, and you say, "Let's see what the biology is all about." You open up the notebook, and what do you see in the middle of the page? A big, fat heart. A heart, picture of a heart. The picture of the heart is divided into 4 sections with an arrow going through. On the side of the page, you see a guy jumping off, saying 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And you call up your friend, and you're like, "Oh my gosh, what's going on here? I asked you for one thing, I asked you to take notes for me while I was away. I asked you to please do me a favor, help me, I'm going on a vacation for 3 days, I want to be ready for the midterm, I have 3 days to study, I was relying on your notes, what did you do here?" And your friend turns to you and says, "What do you mean? The notes are obvious. A big heart in the middle, the heart's divided into 4 parts, there's this part, that part, this part, arrow going through because the blood flows from the top to the bottom, the aorta, the vein, right? You see it's all labeled there. Jumping off the page, your heart rate slow, 1, 2, 3. And all of a sudden, as you start to increase your energy, you start to do more activity, it goes 4, 5, 6. The heart rate kicks up very quick. So if you had been at the lecture, it all makes a lot of sense. Had you only heard the whole thing, it was obvious. But if you're just trying to read the notes, and you miss the lecture, then it's a bunch of pictures that mean nothing. Says the Tosfos Yom Tov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to maintain a Rebbe-Talmud relationship. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to maintain that Torah Sheh Ba'al Peh should remain Ba'al Peh even after it was written down. And therefore, Rabbeinu HaKadosh made sure that when he wrote down the Mishnayos, he wrote them down as notes. They were vague. So if you heard the lecture, you knew what the rule was. You knew what was being said. But if all you did was read the Mishnayos, then it's just a bunch of pictures that don't make any sense. The Gemara came along and said, guess what? No one knows the lecture anymore. People are forgetting the lecture. So Ravina and Ravashi went around and started to collect all of the understanding of the Mishnayos. How do these klalim make sense? What's really going on here? What does the Mishnah really mean? And that's the Gemara. So the Gemara is there to explain to us what's really in the Mishnah. And that's why the Gemara can't contradict another Mishnah. Because the Mishnayos can't contradict. At the end of the day, the Mishnah is a principle. The principles aren't contradicting each other. So the Gemara is there to elaborate upon the Mishnayos. And that's why somebody after the Gemara can't contradict the Gemara. Because the Gemara isn't something new. The Gemara isn't giving mechadesh something that wasn't there before. The Gemara is there to bring out that which was beneath the surface in the Mishnah itself. It's all an elaboration and appreciation of the Svara that's really linked in the Mishnah itself. So the actual Shlomo tells us.
Is that why it always says, like, we're trying to fit in this Amora into the Mishnah?
That's why no Amora can contradict the Mishnah. Very good. So if that's the case, Mishnayis, Gemara are principles. They're not a rule book. They're not telling you how to play the game. They're telling you this is the logic, the philosophy behind the game. Figure out the rules now. Your job is to be that active participant in the Gemara and now figure out the rules. How does this apply nowadays? And as we see what happens next, they have the same development that occurs with the Rishayim. You have Rashi and Tosfos, we'll skip the Gaonim for now. You have Rashi and Tosfos, you have all the Rishonim that are sitting there saying, what is the lesson of the Gemara? What is the Gemara teaching me? What's the principle? What's going on beneath the surface? But Rashi and Tosfos, generally, when they're explaining the Gemara, they're explaining the rules, they're explaining the logic, they're explaining what's beneath the surface in the philosophy. They're not telling you this is the halacha lemaisa, what you do now. You figure that out. We figured it out for our generation. We figured out what was beneath the surface, but we didn't tell you how to apply it in this circumstance. Who's the first person that comes along and lays out, bottom line, here's what you should do? The Rambam. The Rambam in the 1200s, wrote famously the Mishneh Torah. And this is the Loshin of the Yamshel Shlomo explaining what the Rambam did. Very kedai to hear this. Emes, Shir Moshe ben Maimon Asfardi Zal Osa Chibor Noa Mikol Asher Hayu Lefana. He made a beautiful work based on everything that was in front of Binyan Zeh, Shumisudar, Bil Choysov, Uprokov, that he organized all the halachos into sections, very clear and concisely. Everything's in there. Knowing that which was practical and not practical. There's absolutely nothing that the Rambam left out. High praise for the Rambam. Says, what did the Rambam do? He wrote everything down as a clear cut bottom line. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu got from Hashem. Ki'ilu. He doesn't bring any proofs. He doesn't bring any sources. He says, that's why the Rambam not always accepted. We don't know his sources. And he quotes from the Rishonim, the Smag, who asks various stark questions in the Rambam. He says, there's no Mishnah like this. Where are you coming from? And the Ravid many times attacks the Rambam based on basic things that every single person knows about. Mishnayis, Gemaras, Mekamim Mekoymis. And the Rambam is very difficult because of this. Says the Yamshel Shlomo, Kol zeh mismiyon einayim. It blinds people. Shlohoyah may be raya v'zichron l'dvarim, because the Rambam didn't bring down any proofs. Afilu ma'at b'tachlech ha'kitzur ha'yomas, but even if it would just bring down a little, that would have been nice. U'miyovo achre emelech shikvar ha'so, but who's going to come after the Rambam, the king, after he already did this? In other words, there's a taina on the Rambam. There's a taina that we shame him have on the Rambam. That this is not the way Torah was supposed to be. Torah is supposed to be principles that are applied, not bottom line. And that's why the Doire Doiris, people have struggled, starting from the Rishonim, the Ravid, the Magen Mishnah, the Baal HaSmag, struggled and struggled. What's the Rambam saying? Where is he coming from? What's the principle? What is he? What's beneath the surface? All of the Achrayim that spilled pages and pages and pages of ink trying to understand what's the svara of the Rambam. Because the Rambam only listed bottom lines. And he alluded to things that were deeper. He alluded to what was beneath the surface, but he didn't lay it out. The Yamshel Shlomo was really also attacking, as he does later on, the Yamshel Shlomo was also really attacking his Ben Doro, somebody of his generation, the Shulchan Aruch. Because after the Rambam, Machlokes continued, because different Bote Medrash had different approaches and different understandings. The Rambam and the Rambam, the Rashba, the Ra'ah, the Tor, and Halacha continued to develop with different applications of the Kelalim until the Shulchan Aruch comes along and he says the Torah is so vast, expansive everywhere, and every Kehillah is following its own Pesach, every single town has its own way, and the Torah, it doesn't look like one unified Klal Yisrael. It's time to bring it back to the roots, and to standardize halacha for Klal Yisrael. And the Shulchan Aruch collected, as we know, in the Beis Yosef, collected from the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rosh, the three main Rishonim that he chose, and determined what should be the standard psak for Klal Yisrael. Standardize halacha. And the Ramah, interesting to know, the Ramah was a tremendous onuf. The Ramah, Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Cairo, was living in Tzfat, writing his Shulchan Aruch, and the Ramah simultaneously was living in Krakow, Poland, and the Ramah was doing the exact same thing. The Ramah also felt that there was epis mashu, something being lost, and we have to standardize halacha. And the Ramah when was doing the same, making the same exact chibur, just like the Shulchan Aruch. However, he got word, he understood, he heard that the Rabbi Yosef Cairo and Tzfat was putting together the Beis Yosef, was putting together the standardized halacha. And the Ramah, Be'anivoso, instead of immediately jumping the gun and putting out a sefer first, he decided, you know what, I'll wait. I'll wait until the Shulchan, until the Beis Yosef is published, and instead of having two svarim, I'll write glosses, I'll write notes on the Shulchan Aruch. And he scrapped his life's work, he scrapped what he invested time and time, tons of effort into, in order, because he wanted to standardize halacha for Klal Yisrael. There should be a little bit of a hara here, a hara there, but it should be one sefer for everyone. And this was the approach of Rabbi Yosef Cairo and the Ramah. However, various other Gedolei Olam in that generation, the Marshal just was one, amongst many others, the Maharal included, were vehemently opposed to this. Standardized halacha isn't the way to go. We're supposed to be shutfim, we're supposed to be partners, we're supposed to understand and apply. We're not supposed to be chamor lemaso, we're not supposed to be donkeys that are led to do the work. We're not supposed to just follow, we're supposed to be involved. However, as Hashkocha would have it, the Shulchan Aruch, Baruch Hashem, was Mekabel in his Pashit in Klal Yisrael. It was accepted everywhere. With the Ramos Haaretz. But it was Mekabel everywhere. Everyone eventually accepted, after generations, accepted the Shulchan Aruch. It doesn't mean the Shulchan Aruch was accepted. So where do we stand nowadays? Does that mean that we're standardized halacha people now? That everything's just standard and the story's over? If you open up your standard Shulchan Aruch nowadays, points out Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Hakdama, if you open up your standard Shulchan Aruch nowadays, you have the Magen Avraham, the Taz. You have all the Pesachei Tshuva, all on the page, Rabbi Akiva Eiger. And if you look carefully, we don't always accept the Pshat and the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch. The Shach argues, and we accept the Shach. The Sma argues here, we accept the Sma over there. In other words, the Shulchan Aruch standardized and set out, this is where we're going to begin. But it's not where we're going to end. He's going to drive the conversation, collect it and organize it, but it's just an organized collection. It's not a bottom line of how you can follow. And because of that, halacha works by understanding the sources. You have to go back to the kololim. You have to go back to the principles. It's not good enough just to open up a kitzer and understand, okay, that's what we do now. A psak halacha, a real psak, and we'll explain what that means momentarily. A real psak has to come from a Gemara and a Rishon and a Machlekes Rishonim. And this is how the Shulchan Aruch paskins based on the Machlekes between the Tosfos and the Rosh. So we're going to follow the Tosfos. But the Shach has a pshat in the Tosfos. And therefore, what I thought the psak was is really different. And halacha is very dynamic. And halacha is very much changing and developing through the generations. And therefore, it's not a standardized system. This is the way it is, end of the deal, end of the road. Rather, that shutfus, that partnership is still very active and very involved. Yes? Based on, that's a side point, but based on the klolim and the svaras, we can understand the hashkafas atar as well. So Ramesha points out the following. Ramesha points out beautifully after he says the Achash and his Barish Emes the Hira Umashinir the Achokam Achashom of the Yoga, that after the truth is that a Poisek has to paskin after he worked very hard to explain the Sugya from the Shas and the Poiskin, based on all of his effort and work and his Kovid Rosh that he put in your Shemaim. That's how he's supposed to paskin Halamaisa. And he's Mechuyo Vahoyros. He has to do that. He says, Gama Chachom Shavador Azeh, so to the Chachom in our generation. Yesh Lahach Shiva Megiu Lohorah. If we understand that these are people that have reached the level that they're allowed to paskin, Mechuyo Vahoyros, they have to paskin. And what they paskin is considered Emes. The Gemara Baba Tzia that we learned in the Amigimel, but Amichochem, Shishkobois, Nasois, Lahem, Kizdoinois. When they make mistakes, it's as if they did something amazing. Hurak, Kishalot, Torchu, Levarer, Heitek, it appears Rashi also. That's only when they didn't work hard enough. However, it says more than that, you see in Rashi and Avos, that the mission Avos says, Zor, Belimur, says the. Says Rashi over there, Lefalpel Ulachkor Dikdukim Shemitoich She'ein Medakik Emelim Umarin Shaloi Kedei Nasik Zodim. That when they're not careful and they don't look into the sugya to the depth and understand all the depth of the matter, then that psak is Shaloi Kedei and they paskin wrong, that's considered a Zodim. But if you worked your hardest, you were Toyech Liagia Bechol Koyech Elevar Adin, Mechoy of the Oyers came. No matter how you came out, the way halacha works, says Ramesha very clearly, is to go back to the sources and apply. Start from the beginning with all of your koyach. If you reach the hayrav, there has to be someone who's in gil hayrav. But the psak has to be coming from the Gemara. So Ramesha says, they asked me, who am I to paskin? Who made you the gadol hador? Who made you the paisik? He says, you know what happened? He says, you know what happened? Somebody came to me and asked me a shaila. And I said a good svar. and I had good riots. And I started from the Gemara and it came out good. So he told his friend to ask me also. So he also came and asked me a Shiloh. And I said from the Gemara, and I went from the beginning to the end, and it came out good. And eventually the two of them told two more. Then a lot of people started asking me Shiloh. So I passed it for everyone who asked me. But the psak has to be coming from the klolim and from the source. That's a psak. What is a psak? A psak is something that's new and different. Something that's not obvious. If the Mishnah says what to do, the Mishnah says what to do. If the Gemara says this exact circumstance what to do, you're good to go. However, what if it's something new? Tea bags, something new. Cars. Ikar v'tofel, shilas of Ikar v'tofel all over the place. Always something new. So you have to ask a shilah. You have to know that it is a shilah. It's a psak. Rabbi Israel Orbach used to say about his shiver, Rabbi Eliashiv, said, Rabbi Eliashiv, most of the shilas of Rabbi Eliashiv God, again, 70% of the shilas of Rabbi Eliashiv God were not piskei halacha, they were beferish. Just got to open up and you know what it says. It's black on white. But when it's not black on white, it's medam and milsa and milsa. You're comparing two things, and now you have to paskin. Who are we to paskin? You have to know the sources. You have to know the klal. You have to start from the beginning. Halacha is dynamic. Halacha is something that's ever changing, and it's a shutfus, it's a partnership. But you have to be a man d'omer. You have to be somebody who's a gia lahira to paskin. So that's the site. We can't just open up the kitzurim. That's what to do now. Because maybe the kitzur of Shabbos says about tea on Shabbos that if you do a klishlishi, then it's not considered kali abishal, it's good to go. But are you passing like the prima godin? But guess what? The mishabur is faket. And what are you going to do in the Arach HaShulchan? How do you pass it? So you have to be a man d'omer. You have to be somebody who's in the picture, who's a gilo rose, reach that caliber, can start with the principles and play it out. And if you're that person, you're Mechuyav Lasleis Kain, says Ramosh. You have to do it. But first you have to reach that level. That's what Psak is all about. So even though we do have a standardized system, just like the Mishnayos became standardized, the Gemara became standardized, and the Rambam wrote a Sefer that was standardized halacha, and the Shulchan Aruch also standardized things, it didn't become dry, it didn't become just a list of laws, it became a system where we understand the svaras, the philosophy, we understand what's beneath the surface, and we can apply it in every single circumstance. And that's why when you have new shilas that arise, new things that come up, for example, a couple years ago they developed this organic meat, meat that was completely developed in a lab. Milchik, is it fleishik, is it parav? Who? What is this? It's made in a lab. Who knows what it is? There are poskim that started with the Gemaras. And they explained it based on the Gemara and how there was a machlekes between the Rashba and the Ra'ah and the Teres Habayis and the Hasagas and the Mishmeres Habayis. And they explained from the beginning until but the Shulchan Aruch says, but the Shulchan Aruch is coming from somewhere. And he's presenting a bottom line that you have to understand what's beneath the surface if you want to understand what's really going on. That's where a psak comes from. That's what halacha is all about. Questions?
What was the psak?
What is psak? Psak is something that's not black on white. It's a new circumstance that's not already developed and that's not already previously clear as to what's going on there.
I mean, psak on the meat issue.
Oh, that's a big machlekes. It's a big machlekes. It's a big machlekes nowadays. They're still handling it. It's not over yet. It's big, big machlekes. Yes?
When you have these like shilas where there's a month on each side, how do you reach a
rock? You ask your poisek. You ask your poisek. Well, Svar Yishara, who learned through Kol HaTayr Kula, enough Tayr that he's a Gila Ra, and he has Svar Yishara, and therefore he's able to discern between the two approaches, or three approaches, or ten approaches, what is the one that we should paskin and follow. Not that the other ones aren't a chelik of Torah, but this is the one that's the most practical and makes the most sense, and that's the one we should follow. But that somebody has to be a gila or ra, has to be somebody who's a man d'omer, who's in the game.
Can I ask a question?
What?
How do you choose a paisek?
How do you choose a paisek? Most people, there's no easy answer to that. Most people choose a paisek by convenience, is the honest truth. They choose a paisek by convenience. Most people don't even choose a paisek. Most people choose a rabbi. And the rabbi chooses who's going to pass on the shaylos. And you go to the rabbi with your shaylos, and he doesn't know how to pass them, because how many rabbis nowadays know how to pass them? And he says, oh, this is a real shaylos, I'm going to call Rabbi Schechter, Rabbi Dov Cohen, I'm going to call whoever it is. That's usually what happens. Yes?
What happened during the period of the Gaonim that you don't see a lot of Jerusalem or whatever?
It's a great, great question. The Gaonim was a very interesting tekufa. The Gaonim, first of all, most of Torah was centralized in Bavel at that time. That was the majority of Torah in Bavel. We don't have a lot of writings from the Gaonim. We have various pieces here and there. We don't have a lot of writing from the Gaonim. First of all, it's probably very hard to write things down at the time, because it was all handwritten manuscripts and everything like that. It was before the printing press. Second of all, there's a lot of upheaval that happened in that area between rulership, who ruled what, back and forth, and therefore things got lost. So we don't have a lot of stuff from the time of the Gaonim. The Gaonim seemingly spent a lot of time editing, not the right word, but formalizing the Gemara in a very, very set way, making sure the Gersolos were correct and stuff like that. And we do have tshuvas from the Gaonim. We have tshuvas Gaonim, we have three volumes of tshuvas Gaonim, we have Rav Hai Gaonim, we have Rav Sadia Gaonim's Perish, Sefer Munah Bitachon, and Sefer An Chumash. You have the Sefer Rav Hai Gaonim, Sefer Mekach HaMemkar. So we have the Sheiltis, there's what, but it's not a lot. And it's very basic, very basic stuff also. Yeah.
Didn't somebody get shaykh in the Gemara that Pirush HaGemara was saying that it's not shaykh Gaonim?
Not a lot. There are various sections. Gemara at the beginning of Kedushin, you have a few sections here and there. The Ritva famously points out at the beginning of Kedushin that Bezim and Bezim is from one of the Gaonim. Yes?
The Shulchan Aruch has the principles behind the halachos?
No. The Mefarshim on the side, in the Beis Yosef, which he wrote before he wrote Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch was a cliff notes on the Beis Yosef. In the Beis Yosef, he lays out a lot of the principles, where he's coming from, and you have to understand what he's saying there. But that's in the Mefarshim struggle a lot with the Shulchan Aruch because of that.
Does anyone go clear, this is the principle, this is how it goes in the Mishnah?
Yeah, sure. Look at the modern day, look at any of the Shilas and Shuvah Sfarim. That's what they do.